Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Com Sports Station. Good morning and welcome to your 7 o'clock hour of Jolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. But with a twist, Dibs is out. JD is in his stead. We're going to the phones right now. Good friend of the show, former Giants southpaw Kirk Reeder joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Woody, we're not screwing around today. I'm coming right out with a very serious question that we're going to be posing to our fans and our listeners in about 30 minutes. The only criteria is this. The only criteria is this. The movie had to open on July 4th weekend. So the question is, what is the greatest movie to open on July 4th weekend? It doesn't have to be about July 4th. It just has to open July 4th weekend. I'm going to give you five choices. Tell me which one's the best. Independence Day, Back to the Future, Terminator 2, Coming to America, Men in Black. Which direction are you going?
Oh, man. I'm kind of a comedy guy and old because I remember Coming to America. So I'm going with that one.
Coming to America is Kirk Reeder's selection. We greatly appreciate it. Now, welcome
to
the show.
That boy make his own money. That boy make his got his own money, Shreeder. He got his own money.
We desire our room.
I remember that even when I was young. That was a funny movie. So that's my pick.
How you and the family doing?
We are all good. Still safe. Still healthy. Hoping that this doesn't kick back up again. That's what everybody in our area here is getting scared about because Illinois. We just kind of opened up. We were one of the states that were really restricted for a long time, and we just opened kind of our phase four or something, June 26th, and now all of a sudden all these other states are going up. So we're kind of – people here are kind of getting scared again. So hopefully it all works out, though.
Woody, when you look at the comments made by Rob Manfred on the Dan Patrick show, he said flat out that it was always going to be a 60-game season, regardless of the negotiations. As a player, how would you take those comments, given the way that everything turned out?
Yeah, well, I mean, and obviously I think I've told you that before, I'm not into negotiations, but what we were hearing I don't know if that was the whole fact then, because why are you negotiating all the games then if it was always going to be a 60-game season? Then that should have been out there already, and they'd have had to work off of that. I mean, you kept hearing we're going to play 100 or we're going to play 70. I mean, so if that was the case, then I think there might have been miscommunication that he should have already said that and they could have worked off of that. Because I know, obviously, I think the players wanted to play more games and make it more of a season or as much of a season as they can. Because as a player, I mean, 60 games to me, I mean, I'm only going to get, you know, and that's if my arm is all healthy and ready to roll. That's only, you know, 10 to 12 starts in a season. And, boy, I had some bad stretches with the Giants, you know. Five or six, I think 99. I think my ERA was still double digits after five or six starts. So I'd have been looking at a rough season. So I think the players, you know, they probably wouldn't have liked it if they would have said that right. But, I mean, I think that should have been out there if that was the case, and it was always going to be 60.
Well, Woody, when you hear that, and we're playing, I know, hypotheticals, but also this is true. What happens now in the future when they go to negotiations? Do you think the players and the you know, or the unions looks at that and hear those statements and store that one, say, okay, we understand that. Do you think this is going to make that even a little bit more tougher to get what get either side to come to the table and actually operate in good faith?
Well, I mean, I think this whole, you know, situation for baseball, especially with it coming so quick right after this, the negotiations that they're going to have to go through, you know, if next year they weren't going to have to rehash some of this and let it blow over, if the agreement was for, you know, another 3 or 4 years and they didn't have to talk about labor issues for that long, it might blow over a little, but it's still going to be pretty, you know, in the front of everybody's mind. You know, they're only going to play 60 games now, and then all of a sudden you're going to have to start negotiating again and worrying about getting another agreement. So, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a tough, you know, next year or two to get everybody on the same page, and hopefully they can work it out. Because, like I've said before, I want to see baseball, and granted, I played it, and that was my sport. So I want to see everybody come together, and I lived through a strike and missed a World Series that I thought my team had a pretty good chance to win. So I wouldn't want any other player to have to go through that.
Kirk Reeder joining us here on 95.7 The Game. All right, it's a 60-game season, which means there's an opportunity for far more variance. The longer the larger you make a sample, the more likely the cream will rise to the top, right? But when you shrink it, wild things can happen. For example, last year, if you had just played a 60-game season, the Washington Nationals, who went on to win the World Series, they don't even go to the playoffs. So what is the key to a fast start? Everyone's talking about how there needs to be a fast start. The A's need to start fast. Well, if you're a team, if you're a manager, how do you go about getting your team to start fast? What do you do differently?
Well, I think they're probably just hoping that everybody's going to come in, you know, having done something already and just be in pretty good shape. Because I know in spring training, it changed even the more that I was in baseball. Guys were coming to spring training, like, ready to roll by the end of my career. And at kind of the start of my career, they were still using it to get in shape. So I think a lot of the managers are going to be hoping. And I know that they've been monitoring them and talking with them and trying to tell them, hey, stay in shape. We're going to play baseball at some point. And so they'll probably come in pretty close to where they should be. And then you're just going to hope your guys can get it going early. I mean, there's always been guys that have been slow starters or are fast starters, and you're just going to have to hope that you can get your guys on the same page early and get it going as quick as you can. But there's going to be just different philosophies. I mean, it's going to be interesting to me to see how the managers, I mean, because you can't go, like, say, you know, a Verlander, or I don't know if he's going to pitch if he had surgery, or you know, some of your aces that you're thinking can start a game and go nine innings right out of the gate opening day, those guys aren't going to be able to do that probably. So you're going to have to manage bullpens differently and put guys in situations you might not necessarily do that in a normal season, and if they were all ready to go from the start. So it's going to be interesting to me to see how everything shakes out. But like you said, I think you definitely could see teams that you might not think, if it was a 162-game season, oh, well, you know, hey, the guys are going to rise up, and they're good teams, or the teams that are supposed to win, they're going to be there at the end. But you know, I even saw there was an article of the Giants last year went, 19-6 in a right. month or something. I mean, if they jump somebody 19-6 right out of the gate, I mean, that's going to be a pretty good start to try and get in the playoffs.
No question. Well, they always say a fast horse run fast, but it doesn't run long. But seem like you can run fast because this is a short season. When you're talking about, you know, with football, it's a little different. I don't know if it is the same with baseball. When we played, it was usually seems like the offense was at a disadvantage. The defense usually, you know, in training camp, they're going to win more games because of the fact the offense hasn't got in rhythm yet. When you're talking about baseball, is usually the hitting faster, comes along quicker than pitching? How's that work? Who's usually start faster, especially early in the season?
Well, usually they always say like pitching is better early in the season, but again, that's when you're taking into account like it's colder weather when the season is normally starting, and pitchers kind of get in a good rhythm in spring training because they just got to build up their pitch count and they can throw their bullpens and get their pitches ready. And usually they always say pitchers are ahead of the hitters. But, you know, now I don't know how it's going to be because obviously the weather's warm now, so the ball's going to travel more for hitters. You know, you get into the middle of summer, and so it'll be an interesting, you know, I think that could be put to the test if pitchers are ahead of hitters because obviously the weather is different now, and you don't know how much guys have been able to throw or throw bullpens to a catcher depending on where they were at when they went home. And so it'll be a whole different season, and I think, like I said, you're going to see stuff that you probably never thought you'd see in baseball, but if it's going to happen, it'll probably happen this year.
Kirk, how do you think that the game will be received by the fans? I mean, it's a sprint. Every team's going to feel like they're in it, obviously. I mean, do you think that the short year from a watchability standpoint will actually potentially have some advantages to where it could bring, you know, people back, especially after not having baseball for the last 4 months? I mean, how do you think the fans will view everything in light of the way all of this has played out and looking at baseball as just a sprint, really, for the first time ever?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fans will probably enjoy it just because, like you said, there hasn't been baseball. And if you're a baseball fan and you're used to watching it and that's your summer sport, I mean, I think they're going to be anxious to see it. And now, granted, I know people that I've talked to around here, they wanted to be able to go to the games, but obviously that's not a safe thing to do. I mean, so that'll take away a little bit of maybe the fun for them because they don't get to experience it live. But if you still have your team, I mean, I'm a Giants fan, so I'm going to be watching and hoping they can get out of the gate quick. And I know Dusty always told us that the baseball season, I mean, that was his speech kind of in spring training. You know, it's a marathon and not a sprint, but it is a sprint this year. You know, he's going to have to change that philosophy because the 60 games, it will be a sprint. And it could be exciting, like you said. If somebody gets out quick or even, you know, you could play 500 and you still might have a chance to get hot at the end because there's only 60 games and you're going to be playing the same team so many times that I think the fans, you might keep more teams in it with it only being 60. And I think the fans will probably enjoy that because, you know, as a fan, you just want to see your team win. I mean, that's what I think I've told people here, even about other sports. I mean, if you told me, you know, North Carolina, you can't go to the game to watch basketball, but they're playing Duke, I guarantee you I'm still going to be rooting for them, even though there's no fans there or anything. If it counts, I want my team to win, and I think you'll see that with the fans.
Kirk Reeder joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Woody, final question for you. Minor league baseball, the entire season was wiped out. So across the board, you've got, 160 teams that are going to be out of action, which means a lot of the young guys aren't going to get any chance to develop over the course of the summer. It's just going to be a stalemate when it comes to their growth. Guys like Joey Bart, highly touted prospects for the Giants, do you think you might be more inclined to put them on the roster and try to get them some big league experience this season, given that there's no minor league system with which they can play and grow?
Well, I think you will have – I mean, that's going to be – are crazy to watch too, because I think you're going to want those guys to do something. I mean, even if they don't get the hit, I think your top guys, you might want them to go with you or have them somewhere where you can at least know that they're playing baseball and seeing live pitching and not just taking, you know, it won't just be a year. I mean, if you don't have them do anything or get with somebody, it's going to be, you know, a year and a half, you know, for them to, where they're seeing live pitching or game action. And I think organizations probably will try to keep some of their top guys just to keep them acclimated with baseball. And I do feel bad for the minor league guys, because I told somebody the other day, if this would have happened in 1993, the way it's played out, I mean, you might never have seen Kirk Reeder play in the big leagues, because I wasn't a top prospect. I was like the fifth starter in Double-A, and I used that season to kind of catapult myself. And if this would have happened then, and I didn't get the pitch, they might have released me the next year because I wasn't that highly thought of. So I feel bad for some of those guys, but it's just the world that we're living in right now, and hopefully, I mean, I enjoy minor league baseball, so hopefully they'll all come back, you know, next year, and we can get going with that again. But it'll be a tough situation for a lot of those kids.
Former Giant southpaw Kirk Reeder, kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Woody, we always appreciate the time. Have a great holiday weekend, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon as we get closer to the start of the MLB season.
Hey, I will look forward to it. I'll be glad to talk baseball with you where I can see a game. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy to be like, hey, Woody, what'd you think about that game last night, right? Living in that era might be fun.
That might. I never thought I'd be so happy to talk about baseball, but I definitely will be.
Awesome. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.
All right. You guys too.
One thing I highly recommend for anyone who likes to throw a little bit of money down on sports every now and again is the following. Go find an MLB long shot and put some money on him this season, right? Here's the reason. The larger the sample, right? Any sport, if the NFL had to play a 1,000-game season, the best teams are going to distance themselves. The best teams will always distance themselves the larger the sample. That's the beauty of baseball. A 162-game season is 100% incapable of allowing some fluky team to get to the playoffs. It might not put all the best teams in the playoffs, but you're not going to get a garbage team getting really lucky falling butt cheeks backwards into the playoffs. Like, you will separate the men from the boys. You will separate the cream from the crop, if that's even a saying, and you will always get good teams in the postseason. That's what a large sample does. It weeds out the opportunity for bad teams to get lucky. But when you shrink the sample down, when you go from 162 games to 60 games, you are suddenly creating a scenario in which luck, a hot streak, a bad team just catching a few breaks here and there could very much change the outcome. There are going to be good teams that do not make the playoffs this year. There are going to be questionable teams that in a 162-game season would have had no shot, but now all of a sudden might get off to a 15-7 start, and through 22 games with 40 to play, they're right there in the hunt. So I highly recommend, if you were ever going to play a lottery ticket whatsoever, here's your lottery ticket. Put five, put 10 bucks down on a team that's 200-1 or worse to win the World Series. Not saying it's going to happen. You could very well have the Yanks go out and win this whole thing, but take a shot because this year's the year. I think it's like 6 or 7 teams have odds of 200-1 or worse. The Rockies, the Giants, the Blue Jays, the Pirates, the Mariners, the Marlins. You can break it down however you want. I'm just going to tell you quietly. Joe Fortenbaugh, stamp of approval, 200-1, take a shot on the Blue Jays. I'm just saying that. Not saying they're going to be great, not saying they're going to win the whole thing, but each day as we work our way towards the start of the season, I'm throwing a few out here and there. I think you should look at the Cincinnati Reds at 20-1. I've told you for months I like the Oakland A's at 20-1. I think you should maybe consider the Chicago White Sox at 40-1. And then there's the Toronto Blue Jays. They're 200-1. Everyone looks at that division. They're going to talk about the Yanks. Everyone looks at the division. They'll mention the Red Sox. Red Sox are going to be down this year. Pay attention to that. The Rays have an opportunity to make some noise. They're very deep, especially in the bullpen, which is going to be huge this year. But Toronto, and Baltimore's terrible, obviously. Toronto, keep an eye on them. Bo Bichette, Vlad Guerrero Jr., it's Ryu and Tanner Roark at the top of the rotation. They're not going to be world beaters, and they're not going to be the type of team that everyone's going to come into this season saying, oh my God, the Blue Jays, I love the Blue Jays, everyone loves the Blue Jays. People aren't talking about them. It's why they're 200-1. If you're looking for a lottery ticket, JD, I'm just going to throw that out there. The Giants are a lottery ticket to well at 300-1. I don't know if anyone's playing that, but I'm going to throw the Blue Jays out there. But this is a year I think baseball could get a little bit nuts, could get a little bit crazy. It's worth taking some risk.
I'll say this about the Giants quickly. If Bruce Bochy was still the manager for this 60-game season, I might be compelled to play the Giants at heavy odds. No chance I'm doing that now. The A's are interesting to me because I wanted to run this theory by you as it pertains to the A's. The last 2 years, the A's have basically gotten ridiculously hot right at the 60-game mark, okay? They may, though, not be good enough if you go by the last 2 years to get in. They may be one of those good teams that's on the outside. But I keep grappling with, if they can just be good enough to get in, maybe the off, you know, the A's are always hot in that chunk of the year, and then they cool off in the playoffs for whatever reason, whether it's pressure or my bleep doesn't work in the playoffs, whatever it is. I feel like this year it could be different for the A's because just the normal timing of the season would lead them toward getting hot. So that's just my theory on taking a shot on them. The only concern is, how would I weigh that versus they might not be good enough to actually get in given their track record?
I'll tell you this. There isn't a single smart, savvy sports bettor out there who doesn't like the A's this season. Everybody likes them. Everybody's looking at what the A's have is what you need for this situation. Now, that's the one conversation that continues to come up right there is, well, the A's don't break right from the gate like other people. They always get hot, but it happens later in the season. So could it hurt them? Remember, the Nationals wouldn't have even made the playoffs last year if it was a 60-game season. That's going to be on Bomel, and that's going to be on this organization finding a way to break from the gates early. I don't know how you do that, but I do know that with the youth, think about how they probably would have managed this rotation in a 162-game season. With Puck and Lizardo, you're probably going to be a little bit more cautious. You don't need to be. You could throw it to the wind, baby. You can go right after this thing. It's 60 games. It's a sprint. You got to get your studs out there, and you got to let them eat. They've got a deep bullpen, or at least deep enough that they can cycle guys in and out. The rotation's solid. The lineup solid. They should be a play at 20-1. I strongly advise investment in the Oakland A's, and I know a lot of pros like it as well. Lo, how would you? I mean, you've seen it from every angle. You've been on Super Bowl teams. You've been on terrible teams. You've seen everything. How do you change your ways if you're in a spot where you're a team that traditionally starts a little bit slower? How do you break fast? Like, is it a mindset? Is it about your workout, your performance, your approach? What can you do differently to break quick?
I think a lot of it has to do with the leader, and has to do with the guys that are surrounding you. A lot of teams, you got a veteran team to say, okay, we know we can get better, we're going to fix things. But now you got to have the impetus to say, hey, look, we got to start faster, and that's the whole mindset. So now you have the guys, everyone's got to reiterate that. Now you know, guys, I've seen coaches. Remember, we won, started off like 0-3 with the Chargers 1 year, and then Marty the next year, boom, he put a calendar, and you tear off a date, you know, every day, tear off a day to Dane. Day. So talking about, hey, we want to start fast. This is what we want to do. If we want to, you win early, you're usually going to, your odds, you, the first four games, if you can win three out of that four, two out of that four, teams that do that, your chances of going to the playoffs increase. So if you can start those things and start telling guys those things and start that mindset, we become creatures of habit. You got to ingrain it in their heads. You got to have the hitting coaches. You got to have the pitching coaches. All these guys that are around there, the assistants, they have to be preaching and saying the same thing. That's how you start fast. You got to make sure the guys around there, the organization, the skipper, everyone is saying the same thing. That's the way.
Today's show brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Keep them coming on the Chilton Auto Body text line, which is 888-957-9570. If you're going to approach this season from a gambling perspective, number one, have yourself a long shot. Whether it's the Blue Jays or anybody else, find a team 150-1, 200-1 or worse. Have at least one long shot in your portfolio. Number two, look at closers to win the Cy Young Award. They're going to be extraordinarily valuable this year, and you're not going to have pitchers winning 17 games with a sub-2 ERA. It's going to be very different for starting pitchers. Closers are going to have the big, gaudy numbers that have an opportunity, and you can get great prices. Josh Hader's a guy out there that I think at one point is 150-1. Take closers to win the Cy Young. And then number three, when you're looking at MVPs, find some power guys who aren't favorites, who are capable of projecting out to maybe 40 home runs over a 162-game season, and let them feast. Maybe a guy like a Matt Olson or a Matt Chapman, for example. Their odds aren't as long, but you don't need to look at the traditional studs for MVPs. This is going to be a very wild year. There's going to be a lot of variance, more so than we've ever seen in baseball. This is where you can get risky. This is where you can take some shots. This is where you can play the lottery tickets to try to give yourself an opportunity to go out there and make a big payday for a little investment. JD, Chilton Auto Body text line brings up an interesting point about the Giants. Gabe Kapler, 2 years in Philadelphia, both years they were solid in the first half of the season and fell off late. maybe, just maybe, between that and Cueto and Samardzija at the front of the rotation with some, who knows, maybe this is the year Brandon Belt breaks out. I don't know. Some people are telling me. Maybe they start 10-7. It's not great through 17 games, but there's belief. They did catch fire for a little over a month last season. You expand that out to one more month, a two-month hot streak. Suddenly you're in the playoff hunt. You don't see it, though. I can see you on the Zoom right now, disgusted. You look like you want to throw up.
I don't see it. I mean, could they be 31-29 when it's all said and done and on the fringe? I mean, I think that's probably the best case scenario. I just don't see any chance that they could win the whole thing. You know, they have 25-35 written all over them. I love their under. But their under was, again, their under was right about what I think they're – like, I think they're a bad baseball team, but they're under at 25.5. I like the under, but I could see them, you know, just kind of hanging around and being right in that range and having it be pretty tight down the stretch.
All right. Go ahead. Final notes, but shoot your shot.
No, go ahead. No, I'm good.
All right. The holiday weekend around the corner. Very important conversation coming up. The Ringer has a great piece on the greatest 4th of July weekend movies ever. Now, the movie doesn't have to be about the 4th of July. It just has to have been released 4th of July weekend. That's the only criteria. So we ask you, what's the greatest of all time? I'm going to throw five of them right at you. Independence Day, Back to the Future, Terminator 2, Coming to America, Men in Black. You go down the list, Apollo 13, Armageddon. Which one is the ultimate 4th of July weekend blockbuster? The number's 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. That plus the question, is competitive eating a sport? We're getting into all that next. First, I want to remind you that the following segment is going to be sponsored by our friends at Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs.
I promise you, Dibbers, tell him!
On 95.7, The Game.
All right, boys and girls, welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you. Our holiday weekend-bound listening audience, because we love you, because we've got a lot we need your help with in this segment. And because the Money Spot, as always, is brought to you by our friends at O'Donnell Financial Group. Survive before you can thrive. Call the O'Donnell Financial Group today and let them help you thrive. Let's get down to business. Two key things to talk about regarding this weekend. Number one, Joey Chestnut, competitive eating, and whether or not it's a sport. You can now, believe it or not, you are allowed to, for the first time in history, legally gamble upon the hot dog eating contest. To which the hot dog eating contest people have come out and said, you know what? This makes us as much of a sport as the National Football League. Some may scoff at that notion. Others would agree. We'll get into that debate in a little bit, but I'm curious to know what the people think is the greatest 4th of July weekend movie of all time. The Ringer, Bill Simmons' website, has a terrific piece. It breaks down like 56 movies over the course of history that were released on July 4th weekend. Now, the movie doesn't have to be about July 4th. It just has to have been released on July 4th weekend, which is traditionally a weekend for big-time blockbusters. I'm going to throw the opening five on the list at you, and I want to see where everyone lands. Lo, I'm coming to you first. They've got Independence Day with Will Smith ranked number one, Back to the Future ranked number two, Terminator 2 ranked number three, Coming to America ranked number four, Men in Black ranked number five. Those are five monster movies that showed up and made massive box office bank on July 4th weekend. Other movies like Armageddon, Apollo 13, Die Hard 2, Transformers, The Devil Wears Prada. I know we're all fans of that. Those all are July 4th weekend. So if it's coming down to you, what's the ultimate? What's the one that takes the cake as the ultimate July 4th weekend movie?
Come on. You know what? We're going through a tough time right now, and we understand what the world's right now going through. This is not a state thing. This is not a county or city. This is not a state. This is not just a country. It is the nation. Everyone is going through this coronavirus. Without a doubt, Joe, I led there to say it's Independence Day because we are trying to get our independence back. People are tired of being shut up in their homes. They're tired of all the things going around. We all want our independence back. So I'm going with Independence Day at number one. It's tough, but that movie, it made you cry. It made you laugh. The movie, I love it. I like Independence Day as number one.
That movie was a beast. That movie was an absolute beast when it came out. Was that Will Smith's coming out party when he became like a full-on action hero? He was obviously already popular and famous. I'm not trying to knock him, but wasn't that like the first big Will Smith picture in which he came out and it was like, all right, Will Smith is now an action hero?
Yeah, he had some good movies, but this one, it just put him in a different light. It wasn't just him. It was the plot, the scenes, the other characters. You're my crazy man who jumps in the plane. The truck driver. I mean, that movie just had
Randy Quaid.
Oh, my God. I mean, the movie was unbelievable. So that movie itself, I think it was rock star. But, yeah, Will Smith. It was definitely his coming out party.
JD, where are you at? Is Independence Day the number one July 4th weekend blockbuster of all time? The Ringer ranks at number one. Lowe's got it number one. Are you in the same church pew seat and, dare I say, draws on this fine Thursday?
Come on, JD.
I think it's not my personal number one, but there's a hell of a case to be made for it to be number one. And I actually, as we went through the list, I put it at number two for me personally overall.
Well, give me the big reveal, son. I love the tease. Where are you at for number one?
Back to the Future.
Number one for me, I think just in terms of, you know, the age range that I was, and I obviously don't remember seeing this movie when I was 4 years old, but for me it's Back to the Future.
I knew where he was going.
It's the staying power of seeing Back to the Future when you were about 8 or 9 years old and then seeing it again, and then you see all of them, and there's just, to me it's the staying power of Back to the Future. I put that one at one. I put Independence Day number two, and then it kind of goes from there. But I think there's some nostalgia, some childhood nostalgia for Back to the Future.
888-957-9570. Where do you rank them? Because I think that's going to be your 1-2 argument. There's a great case for Terminator 2. An absolutely great case. The sequel, some say, is better than the original. That thing came back with a fury. I believe the year was 91, I want to say. Yeah, 1991 for Terminator 2, when that thing came out, and it blew people out of the water with the technology in that movie. Coming to America, one of the all-time great comedies. That comes in at number 4 on the list. Here's the thing. If you don't use the July 4th parameter, if you just come out and say, what's the better movie? What's the bigger movie? However you want to define it, Back to the Future versus Independence Day. I think most people are going Back to the Future. I'm not going to say consensus, but I think you're going to have maybe a 60-40, 70-30 lean to Back to the Future. But when you categorize it as what's the biggest July 4th blockbuster of all time, that's where Independence Day is going to win, because it's all about July 4th. It's literally named Independence Day, whereas Back to the Future, I don't even know if it mentions July 4th in there. So, Lo, if I just change the criteria and I ask you, what's the bigger movie, what's the better movie, and it has nothing to do with the holiday this weekend, do you go Back to the Future over Independence Day, or are you still taking Will Smith?
Well, here's the thing, Joe. That's why I knew JD where he was going. He was like, you guys, I kept saying Back to the Future because it was right there. I had that movie very, 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 very tight with Independence Day. Now, if you just said, hey, a movie just for a general, if you just want to go and watch a movie just not wanting to be stressed and just a, it's Back to the Future by a landslide. But if you say, I want something that's got some nuts and grit and just something about it that's going to like, wow, that wow moment, that Independence Day, especially on the 4th. If it's on that day, like you said, that's why it's not close when it comes to this, that particular day, Independence Day. And 4th of July, absolutely, that movie is at the top of the list. But if you just said, hey, I just want to go and feel good and watch this movie, it's going to have some humor, some funniness, and all those different things, Back to the Future, man. I mean, the doctor and the mad scientist, I mean, all the different things, I mean, the characters in that, too. So it is. I'm with you on that, too, JD and Joe.
All right, let me throw this out there, then. If Independence Day is so great, how come we haven't gotten a sequel, a prequel, or a reboot? That's where Hollywood goes, right?
Because they know it was so great. They know it was so great.
No, that's my argument. That's not Hollywood's argument. That's my argument against Hollywood. You know that. You know that if a movie's so great, it should never be remade. There shouldn't be a sequel. There doesn't need to be anything. Greatness stands alone. I have long argued that. I think Hollywood is a joke these days with all the reboots and the remakes and all this crap. Come up with some new, fresh ideas. That's why Christopher Nolan's latest flick, Tenet, getting delayed. It's a killer because that's an original concept. That movie is going to be outstanding. I guarantee it. The guy doesn't swing and miss. But if Independence Day is so wonderful in the eyes of Hollywood, how come they haven't done anything else with it? Back to the Future had three, and all three were legit. Well, even the third one was solid.
They did have one, though. They did have a sequel to it. It's Independence Day Resurgence. It was one of my worst movie theater experiences ever.
Wait, what? There's a sequel to that movie?
Yeah, in 2010. Will Smith wasn't in it. Jeff Goldblum was. And you also have an older Bill Pullman, too.
What was he like? Still, he's not the president. They actually had a it was so bad, I don't even remember it. There was a sequel to Independence Day.
Yeah, it was in 2016, and that's really what made me lose all faith in any sequels at all.
What happened in it?
I don't even remember. I was so bored during the movie. Aliens invaded. Jeff Goldblum knew what to do. They went to him. Bill Pullman is like this crazy older ex-president who has all these conspiracies, but nobody believes him. And they win in the end. It was really bad.
So bad, Joe said. What happens in
that? So bad, I asked the guy who went and saw it, who brought it up on the show, what happens, and he doesn't even know. It was that bad.
It really was.
See, that's what I'm talking about. It really defeats the whole argument I just made. But at the same time, that's the problem with Hollywood, remaking that. That movie came to its natural conclusion. We won. There is no sequel to that. We won. That's it. The aliens came. We won. That's where the movie ends. You don't need to go back and figure out, well, let's create a movie about what happened before. Here's what happened before. There was life, and we hadn't met the aliens yet. That was what happened before. It doesn't need a prequel. It doesn't need a sequel. Incredible.
No,
incredible.
There's a movie, Joe, that
what
wasn't on
trash.
That list that I would love to see if they could make a sequel. What's that space? I thought they were going to make another one. My God. And it has those flying little things, and it was an awesome movie. The graphics in it.
So far, the description's leading us all to it.
Flying little things.
It was awesome. Great special effects. Doesn't sound like anything I know.
Text line, hit me up. And he ended up liking the girl, but they were different, and he took his heart, and he couldn't walk, and he was a soldier.
There's a love angle in this one, too. Didn't see that coming.
Are you talking about Mars Attacks?
No, these are... creatures.
Trust me, whatever he's talking about, you have no idea. No one has any idea.
It's the best movie. They should do a... God, these are... And they could fly, and it was
an awesome
movie. All
right, let's start like this. Are there aliens in it?
No.
So what are these creatures that are flying, then?
Okay, so they go to another...
Is it birds? Are you just talking about birds flying in the sky?
No.
Alfred Hitchcock, the birds.
Is it a cartoon?
No, it's not a cartoon. And
is it a dream you had?
Are you talking about Avatar?
Avatar! Who hit that? Who told? Oh my God, Avatar! Now, don't you think they should make
that? That is a ridiculous pull. That is a ridiculous pull.
How'd you do that, Steven? How'd you do that?
It was the text line. It was the text line.
I knew the text line was good. I think you text line. Look how quick they hit that.
Text line's on drugs to come up with that. Guy's on drugs.
I'm pretty sure they do have sequels. I think James Cameron has
a deal. Get the area code. Wait, who hit that? Where area code, Avatar?
There's a bunch of them. To be honest, there's a bunch. I'm looking at it right now. There's like 20 people that nailed it.
I don't know.
There are 20 people that speak low.
But they are making sequels to it. James Cameron has a deal where they're going to, I think, creating at least two more Avatar movies.
Well, that's his thing. Like, the first one, he spent 10 or 15 years coming up with it. And the kicker to the whole thing was he released it. It was this, like, this graphic special effects Marvel. But he ended up losing Best Picture to his ex-wife, which was, like, the all-time redemption story. Because his ex-wife is the woman who either directed or produced or came up with a Hurt Locker. So Avatar lost to the Hurt Locker that year. And his ex is the woman who I think directed it. So, like, the ultimate F you to wow. James Cameron is he gets divorced and she goes out and beats him with a low-budget flick. Hurt Locker wasn't supposed to be some big blockbuster. Like, if you remember that movie, that was just a really well-done movie that took the world by storm. Cameron put years of his life and a ton of money into Avatar, and while it was a huge success, it didn't win. So now he spent the last 15, 20 years getting ready to come up with the sequels. Like, how much time do you need for a sequel? And that's the thing. It, again, what is that movie? What do we need a sequel for? I don't even remember that movie. I remember them taking their hair and tying it to a tree, and then there was enlightenment. And it was really cool to watch visually. You know, if you do a little thinking before you go see a movie like that, you're probably going to enjoy yourself. What's the sequel going to be about, though? Like, I thought we solved everything in that first one.
That's a good question.
Help, JD, didn't you like Avatar? I thought that it was showing that, hey, how men will get greedy and try to take over certain things they want, and we lost. And so the guy, he decides to stay in Avatar and stay there and protect them, and he wouldn't let our military take over and destroy that beautiful place. The tree was unbelievable. They could heal. They had the healing properties. That movie was friggin' unreal, Joseph. I can't believe you're not going crazy over that.
It was fun to watch. Like, visually, it was impressive. The storyline wasn't anything all that terrific. Like, it was a classic story. Greed, and a guy turns on his own to protect someone. It was Dances with Wolves. That's what that was. That movie's Dances with Wolves on another planet. Tell me I'm wrong.
I'm taking Dances with Wolves in that battle.
No doubt. Wow, that's exactly JD. What that movie is. It's Dances with Wolves. Kevin Costner is, I don't even remember the details of that movie, but he gets in with the Native American tribe, and he becomes one of them, and then he fights to help defend them. Like, that's exactly what Avatar is. So James Cameron spent 20 years ripping off a Costner movie, and then just put a bunch of fancy colors in it. There you go.
The weird part with Independence,
they should really hire me in Los Angeles to just oversee Hollywood.
You could be a movie critic. You would be.
No, not a movie critic. That's a waste of the talent. They should really just put me as like the czar of Hollywood. They should run their ideas by me. I'll give you the green light or the red light. I'll let you know what you should remake, what you shouldn't. I'll tweak your stories. I'll tell you what to rip off. Like Avatar, I mean, here's a guy, Joe, stop complaining. How about
this?
Thank you.
Beat it.
Egg in your shoe, beat it if you don't like it, text line. This is genius I'm giving out. Genius.
Do you think at all with Independence Day, like for me, when I think about aliens and I watch like that Bob Lazar documentary on UFOs and stuff, whenever I picture these aliens, I always picture the ones from Independence Day. Like there was a slight bit of realism to it when the aliens invaded. I don't know. To me, it's just anytime I think about aliens, I always think they're going to be like the ones that they featured in Independence Day.
God, I hope not. There's no way we're going to communicate with them positively. We don't even talk to ourselves positively, right? Like, if your skin color is slightly different than mine, there's huge issues in this country over that. But you got 10 fingers, 10 toes. We're roughly the same height. We speak the same language. We can't even get along with that. You show up looking like those aliens in Independence Day, there's no chance we're not firing off a nuke. We're not even going to have a discussion about the nuke. It's just going to get fired. Everyone who's got nukes is going to fire immediately upon seeing that thing. We got no chance. No chance. The only way we have a chance to survive with aliens is they show up looking like Pokemon. Because then you're going to be like, oh, this thing's so cuddly. We can dominate it, right? It's got to play into our arrogance. Because we're
and
very
then
arrogant.
Kill us.
Yeah, and then they'll kill us. It's the only way. That's the only way for the aliens and us to have a conversation. They have to come across as very non-threatening. They have to be little and cute to where we feel like we can dominate them and subjugate them. And then ultimately, we'll completely forget that their superior intellect got them to our planet when we can't even figure out, you know, how to get to Mars, the next planet over. Like, we can't even go see our neighbors, and they're coming all the way across the galaxy. So we're going to forget about that, and that will ultimately be our undoing if we don't just undo ourselves in the process.
So Bad Boys came out in 1995, Independence Day in 1996. Would we count Bad Boys as Will Smith's coming out party as an action hero?
Yeah, you probably have to do that then because that movie was awesome. That movie was awesome. And that sequel was pretty good too. But they made a third, and did that ever come out? Because I heard the third wasn't that good. But that may have just been a review.
The third one did come out. It came out a few months ago, and then he had Men in Black in '97. So these three movies consecutively. I mean, Will Smith was a star in the late '90s.
We were wondering if we could borrow some brown sugar. movie's great.
Hey, Will, he did. Will had a hell of a run, man. Will Smith had a hell of a run. Not Denzel Washington, but he was unreal.
Take Denzel over Will Smith? Just career-wise?
Yeah. I think Will...
No, I don't know about that. Will's really? In a lot. Denzel's probably the better actor, but and he's probably shown a bit more. I don't know. Will's shown a ton of range. He played Ali.
Yes.
What was the movie that took place here in San Francisco? The true story.
The poor guy. Yeah, where he's a stockbroker.
Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah.
He's shown a ton of range.
He's shown some range, but Denzel's. Just his aura, the mannerism. Will Smith's a beast. He can play his own movie and play. He can be solo. You see him do this out of space movie where he's doing his own thing. He's shown range.
What?
But he's remember the one movie where he's freaking in space and he's freaking fighting himself and he's a young one. And that movie flopped.
Oh, the recent one.
Yeah, there was two
of them. It's recent. I didn't see the recent one.
Yeah, he's got a couple that are just.
I didn't see it either, but it's called Gemini Man.
And then there's one too where his son plays it. His son's in the movie with him. They're in space.
After Earth. Yeah.
That one was all right. Yeah. I like that
see?
One.
See, that's what I'm saying. Which one? Give me. I named you three or four movies that were horrible. Now, what about Denzel? Give me four movies that were horrible.
You want me to find that? You're not looking for the top end. You're looking for the bottom end.
Because Denzel's he's a beast. So yeah. I think hit the text line. Text the text line. Who's better, Will or Denzel? Not taking anything from Will. Watch the text line. How they come to the big grilled cheese and say,
"All right."
Come on,
so like the first 10 that show up on this list, I just type in Denzel Washington movies. These are the first ones that show up. The Equalizer, which I didn't see. Training Day, which he won an Academy Award for, and was awesome.
Awesome.
Flight, where he plays the drunk pilot, but he saves everyone's life with that crazy maneuver. Man on Fire. Which is awesome.
Great, great movie. You cried.
America. You cried in that movie?
Yes. When he's sitting in the car at the end. Yeah.
You got an interesting range of movies that make you cry. You know that?
It was just a tear or two. It wasn't letting like.
Crying's crying. You can't be half pregnant.
Okay.
You know
what? You know what? You know what? That's on me. Keep going down your list.
Did you cry in Training Day too? When the drug dealer went down? Did that one sting? American Gangster.
Ooh.
Frank Lucas.
Lucas!
Fences, which I didn't see, but wasn't he up for an Academy Award for that as well?
Yes.
Inside Man.
Ooh.
Glory. We forget about Glory, 1989.
You didn't cry on that one, Joe?
Yeah, I cried on that one. That's
Thank
a good one.
You.
That's a really good one.
Oh, my Lord, 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 Lord. Y'all, the only family I got.
That's good. Remember the Titans.
Oh, my God. Loved it.
Philadelphia. Yo, I think you cry in more Denzel Washington movies than you don't cry.
Oh, my God.
If you think about this, these are all movies you cry in. John Q. The Hurricane.
Oh, you're right. I see what you're saying.
I think you're more likely to cry in a Denzel Washington movie than you are not cry. Fallen. That movie's terrifying. He Got Game. That movie's really sad at the end. Oh my God, Denzel Washington. Does he only pick movies that end with horrible tragedies? What's a movie that ended positively for Denzel Washington? Courage Under Fire. Look at this.
I think The Taken with Pelham 1-2-3 ended positively. John Travolta was taken down, and Denzel Washington was the good guy trying to talk him off the ledge and everything. I think that ended positively, but other than that,
this dude hasn't been in one happy movie. There's not one happy Denzel. He played Malcolm X. We know how that ended.
But that's why.
Oh, my God, man.
His movies are tough. Now, you know. Now, pull up Will Smith and go. You think you're going to ring the bell that many times? Come on. That's what I'm saying. Denzel.
7 pounds is very emotional, though. Like, if you're talking about how hard you cry during these movies, 7 pounds would get you.
You cried pretty hard on that one, Steve?
7 pounds would get you, yeah.
What's that about?
He's going around and helping these 7 different people with problems they have going on in their lives, and it's real sad.
I cannot get over this. Denzel Washington is on Mount Crymore. All he does is do movies that make you cry. It started as a joke, but every single one of these movies tugs at your heart. Like, has Denzel Washington ever done a comedy? Has he ever once done a comedy?
See,
I don't think there's one out there. Has he ever made a joke in a movie? How about that? We'll start there. Has Denzel Washington ever made a single joke in a movie?
He had a few in Training Day, but you can't repeat any of them.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
That's a good point. Oh, my God, man. All right, so Denzel versus Will Smith. Ultimately, where are you going?
Well, here's the deal for me. Here's the deal for me on Will Smith and Denzel. I mean, I think if you just go pound for pound in terms of movies, I'd probably have to go Denzel. But you also have, you know, music for Will Smith.
Yeah,
and you also have major star
of
his own television show. Now, I know Denzel Washington was on, what, St. Elsewhere back in the 80s?
Look at you. What a pull.
Before I was watching TV. But was he ever the star of his own show? That was an ensemble. Like, he wasn't the star of that show. Will Smith was the star of, you know, his own sitcom. Denzel doesn't have that in the bag.
It seems like Denzel has done more good movies than Will Smith, but Will Smith has more blockbusters. Like, if we were just basing it on blockbusters, I think Will Smith has more of them. Because a lot of these Denzel Washington movies weren't necessarily blockbusters, but they were really good movies. Really good movies. Like, I think Philadelphia was a blockbuster, but there's nothing about that movie that'll make you smile. Like, that movie...
Bone Collector, when he's in. He's in some good one with Jodie Foster.
That movie's sick.
Yes, it's sick. But he friggin' plays some unbelievable parts in these movies.
Yeah, and Will Smith movies for me, I had, you know, an older brother who's in his 30s, so he was showing me these Will Smith movies as I was growing up. So with Will Smith, if I have kids in the future, I'd probably be showing them Will Smith movies at an earlier age, and then when they can transition as they're getting older and they can transition into understanding movies that are about deeper things, then I'd probably show them Denzel. So it's a different demographic for each one.
That's a pretty good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Like, I can't get over this.
Men in Black was my ultimate number one movie that I would always watch
Men
as a kid.
In Black.
It was the best.
This entire list of Denzel Washington movies are
don't
all
start crying
depressing
just thinking
movies.
About it.
Yes, they all are. He's not in. I can't find any comedy. I can't find a single movie where he just showed up and, like, someone made some jokes. Like, this is gonna mess up my whole weekend.
I
can be completely honest. My whole weekend is gonna be messed
up. JD, he's
now.
Already shook. You hear him, JD? He's like, wow. Every movie.
Like The Pelican Brief. That's a John Grisham book. That's with Julia Roberts. That wasn't a comedy by any stretch. I don't think John Grisham's made a joke in his life either. He Got Game. That's the Ray Allen movie, right?
Right. Yeah, so
It for me. I don't know how we're going to complete the rest of this show because I've been completely thrown through a loop here.
We do have a couple of callers if you want to get to them.
All right. How come I don't see it on the call log?
I just got these callers, so I didn't have the time to transfer.
All right, don't know who you are or where you're from. Just put them through. Just everybody. Maybe it's Denzel Washington. Who knows? Caller number one, are you Denzel Washington?
Clayton in Fremont. We're going to you.
All right, whatever. Clayton, welcome to the show. What do you got?
Well, I was curious about this criteria of the movie coming out on 4th of July weekend because I think Hamilton, the musical, the movie adaptation is coming out this weekend. So I think that's going to be a huge blockbuster if you're going for it. Classic great 4th of July movie. I think that's a good one. And Back to the Future is definitely my favorite one. And also, Denzel does make jokes. He made the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis joke in Remember the Titans before they get on the bus. And I thought that was a good one. So if you're looking for times where Denzel makes you laugh, that is one where he makes you laugh.
All right. Good point. Yeah. Remember the Titans was a real laugh riot. Found myself just rolling up there with Wedding Crashers. Hamilton, I guess. Yeah, the only criteria is the movie has to come out on July 4th weekend. So Hamilton is going to be coming out this weekend. I mean, you got to figure that's going to be a smash hit. I saw Cozumel at that thing. My wife and I went to it when it came to San Francisco. We come outside. It's like, man, that's a great movie. And there's Tokyo Jim just standing there with his family as well. All of us just apparently seeing Hamilton on the same day. Who else we got, nice guy?
We also got Joe in Mountain View.
Joe in Mountain View, welcome to the show. What do you got for us?
Good morning, gentlemen. I can't even believe you're comparing Denzel Washington and Will Smith. That's like comparing Nikes and Converse. And Will Smith, he can't even tie Denzel's shoes when it comes to acting. And we won't talk about music because... That was a definitely, you know, that was never on nobody's playlist. Come on, Will Smith.
All right.
Game hard.
Appreciate the call. It's tough,
Steven,
though.
Steven, give him a bell. Give him a bell, Steven.
Will Smith did a lot of big movies. It's tough to come on and disparage him like that.
I can't give him a bell when you diss Will Smith, the musician. Willennium is the album of a generation.
I'm sure a white guy from England making that case is probably just getting a lot of people out there to agree with the caller. One quick reminder, the countdown is on. It's time to name the Bay Area's top 10 greatest athletes of all time. Starting Monday, we're going to want you to submit your top 10 list at 957thegame.com. Tune in all next week. Each host is going to share their top 10. And beginning Monday, July 13th, we're going to tally up the fan votes to reveal the final top 10.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.